All right, they are. Introducing Amanda Dawn Christie right now. We're going live to the outside of Philadelphia for the Winter SWL Fest and Amanda Dawn Christie's keynote address.
Requiem for Shortwave transmission performance art. She's going to tell us a bit more about that work in her talk. And of course, what was your field instrument called?
Is she going to be from there? I thought.
Or she can just talk.
Requiem for Radio Pulse Decay.
It needs a name.
It's
an augmented theremin with radio towers.
Yes, and that was, if you were in the sound auction last night, the Shortwave Shindig, you heard Amanda jam, I guess is the right word, with David Gorin regarding both spectrum samples and then audio samples tied to the various towers and the contact microphone sounds that they made. Again, I appreciate your patience as we sort of shuffle things around here with our lighting and the dim person that's standing up here right now reading this stuff here. Amanda does have some audio that will accompany part of what she's doing, so we appreciate your patience as we balance that all out, as they would say. And man, it's been a thrill having you here at the fest, and I welcome you to inspire us more here.
Thank you very much. Do you know which part my simple track is on? Okay. Still, you should have been ad-libbing just a little bit more. I'm going to do a little dance for you guys to entertain you. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Dancing is what we need. We all need more dancing.
It's the interval to Cubans again.
It's okay. That's a lot of little talk. I'm sending an audio signal. Are you getting it out of the speakers?
Yes.
Not my voice, something else. Something a little more magical should be coming out of the speakers right now.
Yes.
It's the cable connection. Give it some slack. Or put it under the computer.
I got a cable back in my room, an 1/8 inch to the one that we were formerly using. You want me to fetch?
I think we're okay.
You're sitting in a field. It's August. It's a clear sky. and it's the time of the perseid meteor showers. So imagine you're sitting in this field on a hot summer August night. There's the perseid meteor showers in the distant sky, and it's firefly season. So in the foreground, you've got the green lights of the fireflies splitting through the tall marsh grasses. And in the distant sky, you've got the shooting stars and the perseid meteor showers. And in between the fireflies and the shooting stars are the red lights of the RCI radio towers. 13 towers standing 400 feet tall, standing guard over the Tantramar marshes. You're having a beer or a glass of wine or iced tea with a friend, and you're comparing stories about the strange places that you've heard the radio signals come from. From your fridge, your sink, your toaster, your radiator, or even off the clothesline. I grew up not far from the RCI transmitter site in Sackville, New Brunswick. I went to university at Mount Allison University, walking distance from those radio towers. I remember nights walking home from a concert, those red lights being kind of your navigational tool to know which street to take, which path through the marsh, which direction you're going. Driving home at night, long drives. Those radio towers were just so common, so ubiquitous. They almost became ordinary. You forgot about how important they were. They were just a landmark along the Trans-Canada Highway, letting you know that you're almost home after a long day's drive. The first couple decades of my life, that's mostly the radio towers were just part of the landscape. They were just always there. But the last decade, I've made several art projects about them. Like the film you saw yesterday, but there are other projects as well. Photo series, sculptures, sound art, performance. Tonight I want to talk about, mostly about actually Requiem for Radio, because you also saw the film yesterday. One of the things that struck me about radio is the fact that there's something about it. Yes, it's science. There's laws and rules that govern propagation, reception, and transmission. We've got the propagation reports, all of this stuff. But there's still something very magical and mysterious about these voices and sounds traveling through the air all around us, all the time. And it's one thing when you go out searching for a transmission, a sound that you're trying to find, but it's something else when the sound finds you when you're not even looking for it. And that's how my relationship with the RCI radio towers started. It was the spurious transmissions, the external rectification, and the rusty bolt effect that drew me in. It all started for me with a radio building workshop where I built a radio out of a toilet paper tube and some magnet wire. And I could pick up Italian radio. And I thought I did a great job. I thought, wow, I'm a natural. I'm picking up Italian radio. No, I didn't do a good job. I was just near the Radio Canada International Shortwave site where people in Sackville could hear the radio from their sink, from their fridge, from their toaster. So of course, with some magnet wire and a toilet paper tube and a germanium diode, I could hear it tell me. Well, when I heard that people could hear the radio from their sink, I was jealous. Because I didn't hear the radio out of my sink. And you can't just go online and order a Sony sink mic. So I started off trying to build myself a radio sink. Now, originally this presentation, I had images to show, and I had actually a schematic where I took the schematic of a Foxhole radio and converted it to plumbing. And I began the Marshland Radio Plumbing Project. I had a persona, I had a uniform, a lab coat with my name embroidered on it, and I was a Marshland radio plumbing technician. And I had no funding. You know, some people, their paychecks go to cable TV or to cigarettes or alcohol. Well, mine went to plumbing. Every paycheck, I'd drive to Amherst to the plumbing store and buy another 12 feet of copper pipe. $79 Canadian, which is a lot when you work at a nonprofit. So over the course of the summer, I got a bunch of pipe, and I would take my sink out on the marsh and try and hear the radio in my sink. It was about 24 feet long, but that doesn't include, you know, there was coils, like the pipes would kind of wrap around. And each time, like, I'd add some insulation here, add a bit more pipe there, and it never really worked. And I learned that I could actually go to the RCI site. Well, at first I went for a tour, and I mentioned to the technicians what I was doing, and they thought I was crazy. I was the crazy sink girl, exactly. And so then I learned, if I went after 9 p.m., there was often only one person on duty, and they were off work. So I'd show up at 9, and we'd go down to the kitchen, and they'd make a pot of coffee and get out a topographical map, and they'd print off all the schedules, not just RCI, but all of the schedules for, and all their subcontracted ones, NHK, Radio 3, Voice of Vietnam, of course. Yeah, Voice of Vietnam. And so we would plan out, where should I take my sink and when? Because it didn't pick up DRM, so I had to make sure it was not a DRM broadcast. We had to, like, make sure it was a nice analog one. And so over the years, I was taking my sink out, and I kind of became this kind of town character. There was a newspaper article, local artist tries to hear radio in kitchen sink. And in a town of 5,000 people, it's not long before people know who you are. So I'd be at the grocery store, or the pub, or the cafe, and strangers would come up to me, who weren't strangers for long, but they would come up and say, so did you hear the radio in your sink yet? They're like, no. Well, let me tell you, when I was a kid, my mother put clothes out of the clothesline. Anytime she rolled that clothesline, we'd hear the radio coming off the clothesline. I was hearing so many stories that I started carrying a sound recorder with me and started recording these stories. I didn't know what I was going to do with them. But they're amazing. And I figured, well, you know, they're kind of like, you know, fishing stories. You know, I caught a fish. It was this big. But I just kept recording them. And I thought, yeah, I'm a filmmaker. This is beautiful. This landscape is amazing. So I decided I would do a landscape film, and I would film four seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter, just at the towers, and I would take these sound recordings, and I would make something. And the more I started learning about the towers, the more I learned about shortwave, international shortwave politics, the more I thought, wow, this is really amazing, this is really important. How many people around here don't realize what this site is for all of us living here? It's just a landmark, letting us find our way home after a night at a concert. And here it's doing these amazing things. And I would show the sink in art galleries as a sculpture, and I would put the sound recordings in the drain trap. I cheated because it never got the radio. I'm still determined one day I hope to make it work as a radio, but in the meantime, I put the stories inside the pipe, and so in an art gallery it's a sculpture, and you can listen to the sounds coming in. So then I started making the film, and as I mentioned yesterday, after I started shooting, they announced they were going to tear down the site. And normally, you're not allowed to film a demolition because you might catch an accident. And of course, Radio Canada and CBC didn't want someone to make a political documentary criticizing them. And I was like, I'm just a crazy sink girl. You know, I'm not going to make anything political. I'm going to make a weird underground film. No one's going to see it. It's okay. You're safe. And so they let me film it. And so I was very lucky. Thanks to the project, the Marshland Radio Plumbing Project, I was able to actually be on the site and film it throughout the entire process of the demolition. Now, during that time, I also collected a lot of the debris and artifacts. I have several pieces of radio towers. I made gallery installations, one of which is called Radio Towers Like Wind Chimes, where I had six pieces of radio towers. They're 10 feet long, they weigh 300 pounds each. And so I've only been able to show it twice. It takes an art gallery with a 20-foot ceiling that's very strong, and I suspend each piece from a single piece of aircraft cable. Mm-hmm. And again, if I had images, I was going to show you some pictures. But imagine these pieces of radio towers, each one hung from a single piece of aircraft cable. And the idea for me at that point, so you saw the film, which is more a list of stories and documenting this site with photography and film. But with my other art projects, I wanted to document not necessarily just the facts. I wanted to document the things that you can't put in words, the things you don't catch in photographs and in film. I wanted to capture the spirit of the towers, the essence of not only what they stood for, but the essence of the content of what was broadcast overseas and far away, but also the essence of the experience of the listeners far away, what they got. You have things going in two directions. You're sending a broadcast and people are receiving it. So how do you capture that in just a straight photograph, or in words, or in facts and dates and numbers? So in the installation, Radio Towers Like Wind Chimes, I hung these heavy pieces of radio towers from the ceiling, and they became delicate, like wind chimes. And then they looked like, one curator said, it was like they were rising from their graves. They were just suspended. And they were at once light and dangerous. Because you looked at that, you knew they were heavy. You don't want to walk underneath of them, but you can. I worked with an engineer, it was safe. But it looked very unsafe. And so I did several projects like that. And then after the demolition, I began another project called Requiem for Radio. Now, it's not a Requiem for Radio in general. It was more of a Requiem for the RCI site. I'm just trying to get to the beginning of my soundtrack. My mouse is weird. It was going so smooth until now. So Requiem for Radio, many of you were actually involved with this piece. Many of you, maybe some of you, I don't know if all of you know it. So basically, after I finished the film, I wanted to make, so the film was more narrative, it presented stories, it presented emotion, but I still was struggling to share my experience with radio towers and with radio. And one of the things with radio is that it is simultaneously a solitary experience. That it can be isolating and lonely, both when you're listening and when you're transmitting. It's often something we do alone. And as an artist, I often feel that a lot of my practice, a lot of that filming I did alone, I had a crew of three people on two occasions, but most of it I did alone. And then, at the same time, radio is a community experience. It's very much a collective experience. And that was the other thing I was trying to capture, because we have these mysterious experiences, and there's community when we try to share our stories, when we hear someone else's story, when we share our story, or when we hear those things that we're not meant to hear. One of my favorite things is when we become an unintentional witness. We pick up a signal that was not meant for us. It was meant for someone else. But we listen in. And then when we try to figure out what that was, that is where we start having these collective community experiences. And that was what I wanted to try and figure out. I think this is a good level for my audio. Is that all right? Okay. Because I'm going to start messing with the volume on my end. So if you leave the levels alone. Well, I'd rather you don't ride me, because I've got some levels I'm going to do from here. So this piece, what we're listening to right here, is a composition by my friend Lucas Pierce. He's a composer in Halifax, and I commissioned him to make this work for the performance Requiem for Radio, which was a requiem for the Radio Canada International Towers, but just Requiem for Radio sounded better, so that's what I went with. There's a lot of other elements to the project, and I'll focus on this, because some of you in the room, I'm not helped me to transmit, and some of you heard it and got some of my QSL cards. I had this image in my head after I finished the film. I developed this relationship with the radio towers. They kind of become like people to me. Each one had a personality. And I thought, what if different transmission sites around the world were similar? And what if they could mourn the passing of their fallen sister site You know, like when you have a friend who has died, and it takes a while before, they're still in your phone book, and it takes a while before you realize that, and you still, you pick up the phone and you go to call them, and you're like, oh, they're not there anymore. And I imagine that happening with transmission sites around the world. So I had this idea, and I knew Jeff White from WRMI, and Christian Milling from German Shortwave Service. I met White Meat, but over the phone and email, Alan Meter from WBCQ. And I bought some airtime from them, but I also convinced them to use their own, lend me their voices to call out to RCI. And my friend Lucas, who's a composer, electroacoustic composer, we're listening to his piece now in the background. He composes for film, which is often in 5.1 surround sound. So I asked him to make a piece with five channels, but instead of like in a theater where you would have a center speaker, front right, front left, back right, back left, I asked him to give me the five channels separately as five different MP3s, and I sent one each one to a different station around the world.
With the RCE, with the Common, with the Melden, wo seid ihr? Hier ist Deutschland. Wir rufen Kanada.
That's Christian Milling.
RCI, bitte kommen. Wo seid ihr?
From German Shortwave Service calling out in German, RCI, where are you? Acknowledge. Come in. Now we'll go to...
This is German Shortwave Service.
We'll bring in one second here. Then we're going to hear... Jeff White from WRMI. And what is this? Oh, it's on WBCQ. Oh, but it's
kind of the same, but slightly different. What is this? And someone said, I'm decoding the Morse code, and it's in Latin. Does anyone speak Latin? What is this? And there was this whole thread going, what is going on? And that, I found, was beautiful.
Thank you.
WBCQ, you would have had tenor two. It was Joseph Goodwin. So this is what you would have heard if you were listening to the pirate stations. And what surprised me from the QSL requests was people either got everything except pirates or only pirates. And I found that interesting. Just to be present to the wonder and the magic, because there's a lot more to these stories than facts and figures and dates and histories. I felt that in remembering the towers, there was more than just a factual history of dates and numbers and statistics. There's a lot of value in experience and things that we can't necessarily explain and put into words. We don't have to describe it and put it into words. There's a lot of beautiful things that can happen when we just open ourselves up to the magic in the noise and the mystery of the things we can't explain.
Of our evening program.